Hello and welcome to the Jesus Tribe podcast. It's exciting to have you here. We're currently on a series titled Is Anyone Up There? Where we answer questions regarding the existence of God. Is there a God? Does he exist? If he does, how does this affect me as a human being? Join us on this amazing journey as we search and try to make a case for and against the existence of God.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Jesus Tribe podcast. I have here with me Daniel. Hello, Daniel.
Hi, Faith. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining in.
Yes. So we're going to do a quick recap of what we learned last episode.
On our last episode, we looked at the concept of intelligent design, and pretty much the summary of it is that the world works so perfectly. You know, the sun knows when to come out, the moon knows when it's time to shine. Everything just seems to have its place in the scheme of things. Everything seems to know what to do at every particular time. Snow knows when to fall, rain knows when to fall. You know, when it's summer, everyone is happy and bright. So everything just has its order. And it's really mind-blowing to just take a step back, you know, and think on how everything just came to be. And so we said that if all of these things didn't happen by chance because of the orderliness of everything, it's only imperative that it had to have been someone behind it that designed the whole thing. So we explored the concept of if something works for a particular purpose, then someone made it that way. It didn't happen by chance, right? So that was pretty much, in summary, what we looked at last episode. And so we also examined, you know, common objections to the argument of intelligent design, where we spoke about how nature clearly isn't perfect, you know. So if nature isn't so perfect, then is the designer as intelligent as we say that he is or she, you know? And yeah, another argument that we had was that some people would say that everything we see around is millions of years of trial and error. So, you know, we try to see it work, we evolve, try that it didn't work, we evolved, and all of that. Yeah. It was a very exciting conversation, and I think if you haven't listened to it, you should probably, you know, pause this, go back, and then come back and jump on this one, right?
Do you want to add something, Daniel?
First of all, I think Gold Star, that was a good recap.
And, thank you.
I hope our audience can relate with that as well and can remember some of the talking points we discussed. I think the basic takeaway from everything we said in the last episode was the idea that behind every intelligent design is the presence of an intelligent mind or an intelligent designer. Mm-hmm. And so if what we know to be reality works in an ordered, or you could say a structured or a systematic way, then it suggests some form of intelligent mind behind it all. And of course, you brought out the common objections, which are very valid. The idea of evolution, which, stay tuned guys, we're going to have an entire episode dedicated to that. And then the second common I'm pretty excited for that. And then the second common one, which is, nature really isn't as perfect as you think it is. There are a lot of unnecessary or wasteful processes in the way the world works, which may be true, but like we said, perfect design is not synonymous with intelligent design. Mm-hmm. And if you can look at the very first computer and say it is intelligent because of the structure that goes into it, and you can look at the iMac today and say this is also intelligent, then you already are validating the fact that something doesn't have to be perfect for it to be intelligent. And so even the world, by that argument, contradiction rather fails, because the world clearly has structure set in place that regulates how everything works, with things like gravity, things like the way space works, the way time interacts with space, and all of that. It shows a certain level of order that reflects an intelligent design. So I think that was a very good recap, Faith. And I'm sure we all, I hope that we all have fun listening to that topic. But yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel. So jumping right into today's topic, yeah? A very interesting one, if I do say so myself. We're exploring the concept of morality and consciousness.
Right.
I remember when we were prepping to start this podcast, and then I remember saying that it was going to be an episode of a lot of table shaking, you know. Because we're in a very, very sensitive world at the moment where everybody's literally on eggshells. You have to be careful what you say, what you stand for, because everybody is just hypersensitive, you know, and everyone is taking offense at other things. I think I remember, let me not get ahead of myself, right? But yeah, we live in a very hypersensitive world where people are just really looking out for the next person that will say something, and then you pick up an annoyance, you know, on that.
Yeah, the cancel culture. Yeah.
Cancel culture and all of those things. But yeah, morality and consciousness, basically. So, Daniel, what do you have to say about this before we go right into it?
Sure. And I think at the end of the day, if we remember the journey we're on, at the moment we're exploring arguments that point towards the existence of a divine creator being, commonly referred to as God. Mm-hmm. And the question then might be, where does morality and consciousness fit in? Or how does morality, or the fact that we are conscious beings, point to the existence of a creator? And there are many angles to take this from, right? I think one of the easiest ways to start to think about this is in the way the world works. I mean, just to look around us and you see where a people or society is governed by laws, many of which tend to be moral. And so what we call fundamental human rights today, I mean, we're currently in February recording this podcast, and here in the US, I'm not sure if it applies to the whole world as well, it's Black History Month.
Yes.
And it's a month taken to celebrate the history of Blacks and to recognize the struggles and to recognize the efforts that have been taken so far in bringing about racial equality and justice. Let's even look at some of the words I just used today. I said equality. I said justice. These are things where across board, everyone recognizes to be ideals we should strive for, right? We look at fundamental human rights. We talk about things like freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. We talk about things like, don't harass someone who can't defend themselves. We talk about things like ethics, moral codes. I mean, these are things we touched slightly when we're discussing the idea of truth.
Yeah.
But I think they begin to even become much more significant. So, like I was saying, a starting point to think about this is that by and large, every society has some sort of shared ideal that they recognize to be inherently good. Now, how they might strive for those ideals might be different. So a society might strive for, in quotes, unity by forcing everyone to do something, and so there's this, in quotes, false sense of unity.
Yeah.
Another society might try to fight or to strive for that same ideal using a different approach. But the point there is, unity is regarded as an ideal that every societal structure strives for. What then that shows is that by and large, by the very working of human nature, we recognize some things to be morally absolute, mm-hmm. right? And it's reflected in what we call fundamental human rights. So where the idea of a God begins to come in is that if you argue that these moral laws are simply a product of human instinct and evolutionary adaptation, then even what we uphold to be morality today, if it doesn't infringe on our survival as a species, it will really not have any significance today. So why should I be kind? Why should I be selfless? Why should I be humble? Why are those things regarded as good things, right? If they really, at the end of the day, doesn't really mean much in the survival of the human race.
Yeah.
So it becomes something that if you take away the objectivity or the absolute, right, and you make it become an entirely relative construct, the very fabric on which we have tended to define morality up to this point completely falls apart. So that's just by way of introduction, and I think it's something that we can definitely delve deeper into, but I just want to stop there for now, hear your thoughts, and then we go from there.
You know, that's a very, very, very strong introduction, and like you said, we touched a bit on this in our podcast, I think the second or third one on 6 or 9, where we spoke about relativism, and we kind of said that most times we don't really care about why we don't really want to give too much thought into why morality should be, you know, absolute and independent of human beings, like of our feelings and emotions, until it affects us. So now I can stay here and say that, oh, I mean, why should I even care that freedom of speech is a thing, until something or someone has hurt me deeply and I need to express myself and let people know what I'm feeling? Then it becomes a problem that directly affects me, and then I'm concerned. So I feel, I like where you came from, saying that, you know, the entire, most times, or at least a great number of people in the world agree on certain things. We believe that old thing, you know, is everybody should be nice. You should be kind to people. You know, you shouldn't go around shooting people down. It's wrong. Right? I mean, I'm hoping you believe it's wrong, you know.
So, amen. We hope so.
So it's just things like that. It's human not to care about things until it starts to affect you on a personal note. But even away from you being personal, you just generally know when something is off. You just feel, oh, this isn't right. I shouldn't do this for another person. No one should do this to me. It's why you can, you know, take offense at things, right? Because they are wrong. And that's it's really significant today if we're going to discuss this concept, because I can't have another person who grew up in society that has been influenced judge my standards of morals, because he's already influenced. He's not independent. He's not free of bias, right? And then there's something, I think the last time we spoke about this as well, I referred to my profession in accounting, but then there's something we always do. I work with an audit firm, and whenever we're going on jobs, we need to fill something called an independence confirmation. So the client and the company, my firm, needs to be sure that we don't have a sort of bias against this company you're working with, else it will affect the opinion we give, and our opinion has to be seen to be true and fair, and it has to actually be true and fair. So people only trust our audit opinions because they are sure that every single person that worked on that team had nothing to benefit or to gain from a relationship with the firm, so they had nothing to lie about, right?
That's
how it works in this sphere of audit or accounting. So, you know, taking that to a larger scale, if we're going to trust, you know, standards of morals and morality and consciousness, I need to be sure that, oh, the person setting these standards doesn't have anything to gain from tilting the scale to his favor or her favor.
I think, you know, you're touching on something that is very important, and we're seeing the backlash today. The moment we relativize, I hope I said that correctly, but the moment we make morality a relative issue, the question then is, on whose standard, or who's in relation to what? Because at each point, there would be, just like you said, people, there would be bias. On whose scale do we then hold each other accountable to? Because on one relative context, you might be doing the right thing, but in another lens, you might be doing the wrong. So by what standard can we then establish anything today to be right or wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's we, like you said, we talked a bit about that in the idea of relativity, that is the biggest problem with relative morality. It's because it cannot build a proper functioning moral society, because at the end of the day, whoever defines the relative morals that society lives by, you are setting the person on a standard that he is above the moral standards he set, because he created those standards. Does that make sense? For morality and right and wrong and accountability, for all these things to become valid concepts, there must be some sort of objective standard to which we all submit ourselves. In times past, we've seen that in, like we've said, things like unity, peace, things that don't bring harm, and all of, like, stuff you said that, of course, once it hits home, you start to see that this thing is not as relative as I thought. So theft, right? Or murder, unjust murder, and stuff like that. But once it begins to become things like, let's say, pleasure, right? That you say, oh, it's not necessarily harming anyone. What then makes the pursuit of pleasure a moral ideal or not? At that point, you cannot use relativity and point fingers, because there is no objective standard to fall to, and so no one would really be right, no one would really be wrong. And that is what we see in the societies we live in today. And it's a problem, because it does away with the idea of accountability altogether, which, if it was a purely naturalistic point of view, we shouldn't even have bothered in the first place. And let me explain. One of the things we talked about in the article was, from a purely natural standpoint, morality really isn't objective. All these things are just constructs that don't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. Because if there isn't a God and everything is just going to follow a natural order, then ultimately we're all going to die. Even if you say, oh, what about our legacy? Human beings would ultimately go extinct, or the sun would end up destroying, or whichever one comes. I mean, we've done all the scientific calculations about so many ways in which everything we know to be life could be wiped out a few million or billion years from now. So even in that point of view, there really isn't any lasting reason to be a morally upright person. Does that make sense? Because last, permit this land, we go all perish, right? So what is the point? And so you start to see that for moral ideals, for someone to say, oh, you are an honorable man, or things like, oh, you are a good person, you are a kind person, for things like that to have any meaning today, we have to appeal to an objective standard of morality that we ourselves didn't set, but we find it to be very present in the way we interpret reality even today. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. And I think it's also not out of place to also mention and bring back the example we referenced back in a few podcasts ago, where we said that the moment we begin to tamper with the standards of morality, where we begin to move it a bit, then we now start to ask, when do we stop moving it? When, how far is it? So if I move it a bit today and say, okay, let's allow this because it makes this person happy or it makes that person happy, and then tomorrow someone comes and says, oh, this actually makes me happy, I enjoy killing people, would I say that, oh, okay, go ahead? You know, and then I think that we've just reduced a lot of things to, oh, you know, I think I once said one time that I think one of the most dangerous phrases that exists out there is, do what makes you happy. I understand the place of, you know, being in a happy place mentally, being in a happy space where, you know, you're functioning right, you're happy with yourself, you're doing good, you're just in a good place. That's very important. I preach it, be in a good space mentally. But then sometimes do what makes you happy doesn't mean that's what's best, right?
Yep.
I have a brother. We have a brother. He's 9. if you left to him, yeah, he would wake up, not go to school, obviously, sit down all day, watch YouTube, play Roblox, Minecraft, and eat junk all day, all week, for the rest of his life. Yeah. And he's happy. But I'm older, and I know that, oh, this isn't right for you. This isn't what you should be doing. It's wrong. It doesn't make him happy.
Yeah.
But I know that that's not what's best for him, right? So most times when I say do what, when people say do what makes you happy, does what make me happy at the time mean that it's best for me? I'm writing exams at the moment, professional exams, and I have to study to pass my exams. Do I enjoy studying late into the night, come back from work tired, and I'm still having to pick my books? The answer is no, I don't enjoy that. Why? Because it's stressful. It takes energy. And I'd rather come back and watch a movie and chill. But I have to write these exams and I have to pass them. So I have to study. So if I was going to do what makes me happy, I would come back from work and I would play. I would text all day, watch TV and eat and sleep. And then my June exam.
Young and wild and
free. You guess. And then I'll flunk my exams, obviously. Well, it made me happy, so I did it. But that's not what's right, you know?
Yeah.
And we've built a society where everyone just seems to be blind to these things, or everyone has just maybe deliberately turned a blind eye, or doesn't want to be the one to speak out. You don't want to be that guy saying, oh, don't do this, even though it won't make you happy temporarily. Nobody wants to be that guy. But somebody has to be that guy. Somebody has to say these things, because we're all thinking it at some point, you know? And then most times what people project that they say or that they believe is not what they actually do. And it's toxic. It's a very toxic environment. Very toxic, because some people that feed off the energy they receive from people online and then live their lives with that, have their lives in a wreck and in a ruin. And they're wondering, why is it just me? You know, and then they don't know that, people aren't actually living what they say they're living. I'll come out and I'll post, live your best life. And I'll go offline and go and study, because I don't want to be broke in future. I want to have a good job, right? So we built a society on nothing, really. Come to think about it, on nothing. Just exists on a bed of lies.
Yeah.
Right? And because all of this would have all started happening because we started shifting the ground. Oh, we want everybody to be happy. We want to keep everybody happy. You know, we want everybody to just lie on a bed of roses, a cup of wine, and just lounge. And I understand that it probably feels good now, but it's not what's best for us as a society. It's not. And then I feel like we've turned this podcast into an air your grievance, or I don't know how to explain it before. But I feel like it needs to be said, you know.
Yeah.
Morals are beyond what you feel. Morals are beyond what is convenient for you to do. It's not about it's not about the easiest thing to do. It's about what you have to do. And I don't know how else to say it again. Daniel, help me out here.
I feel all you're saying. And I think the point basically is that none of that is valid if there isn't some objective being to hold us accountable to this moral standard. I think it goes back to what we're saying, that at the end of the day, if there really isn't a God, there is no objective morality, and we're all just natural constituents made up of atoms and molecules that are ever changing, then really, please live your best life now, because really, there's nothing out there. There's nothing after you die. So you might as well live your, in quotes, one life to pursue all the reckless pleasures you might have. But if there is indeed something called objective morality, to which there are objective standards of good and evil, there are things that are actually virtuous and there are things that are equally vices, it then becomes imperative. And the truth is, on some level, which we'll start to explore in our future, in our next podcast episode, everyone feels this binding, or for the most part, we all, to at least some degree, maybe based on how you then respond, it starts to change. But we all feel this binding imperative of I ought to do something. And sometimes what we feel like we ought to do is not what we want to do, which is what you were getting at, and rightly so. And then you then ask, okay, so by what standard do I then decide what to do? And another question that could easily come up is, like you said, if morality becomes ultimately completely relative, for instance, and a simple question would be, if murder becomes legal today, does that make it moral? Does a society's unity around something make it objectively acceptable? I think that's the question. Again, what we're basically saying, and I think this is a good part and place to start to round up, is if there isn't a God, then yeah, I mean, it really doesn't matter what society decides to do, because ultimately society means nothing in the grand scheme of things. But if there is,
yeah,
a God to whom we are accountable to because of the objective standards that have been set in our hearts, then these things become very important questions. Things like good, things like evil, things like this is the right thing to do. You hear this all the time, do the right thing, do the right thing, right? If there really isn't a God, there is no right thing. I think that's, and that's where we start to, and of course, like I said, we're going to start to explore this more in the next episode. But this is where the idea of morality and consciousness starts to tie or heavily depend on the existence of a God.
Yes, and I think even overall, it's very important that you hold yourself to higher standards. You know, just, it's going to take a lot of discipline and all of that, but just hold yourself to higher standards, basically. I think on, we'll end it on this note for now. Thank you. If you listened up to this point, I think it was a very intense episode, but thank you for listening up to this point. See you in our next episode.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Jesus Tribe podcast. We are an organization aimed at presenting the gospel of Christ in its simplicity to everyone everywhere. If this podcast has stirred up any questions, please feel free to mail us at tribejesus@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook @JesusTribe to stay up to date with our other activities and content. Till next time.